Okay, I want to start by taking you back to a very specific moment in August 2019. It was a simpler time in some ways, but then out of nowhere, this headline drops that sounded like a glitch in the simulation. The President of the United States, Donald Trump, expresses a very serious interest in buying Greenland. Not visiting it for a summit, buying it, like it was a condo in Manhattan.
It was definitely the moment the memes took over the internet. I remember seeing those, you know, those photoshopped images of gold Trump towers just towering over the colorful houses in Nuuk. It seemed completely absurd to most people.
It did. It really felt like a joke. But here's why we're talking about it today. While the internet was laughing, geopolitical strategists were absolutely not. Because that headline, as wild as it was, it basically tore the cover off a very, very fragile dynamic in the Arctic. And it turns out it wasn't even the first time the U.S. had tried this.
No, it wasn't. And that's the historical context we often miss. If you dig into the archives, the U.S. State Department under William Seward actually inquired about buying Greenland and Iceland way back in 1867. Then, much more famously in 1946, the Truman administration offered Denmark $100 million for the island in gold bars.
$100 million in gold bars. That is a movie script waiting to happen. So clearly, this isn't just about ice and polar bears. This is strategic real estate. But that 2019 flashpoint, it reveals this huge disconnect. You have this massive strategic island. And yet, up until that offer, we almost never heard about it in the context of, you know, conflict.
Exactly. And that silence is not an accident. That brings us to the research we're diving into today. It's a study published recently in 2025 by Gabriele Grisis. It's titled Constructing Low Tension, the Role of Experts and Narratives in the Case of Greenland.
And the mission for this deep dive is to understand this concept of low tension. Because when you look at the reality, you know, Russian submarines, Chinese mining interests, U.S. missile defenses, the Arctic really should be a high tension zone. But the documents, the diplomats, and the experts keep telling us, relax, it's all quiet here.
It's a fascinating paradox, isn't it? You have a region that's heating up both physically and geopolitically, yet the official narrative, the story everyone agrees to tell, is that it's a low-risk zone. And the study argues this isn't just a happy coincidence, it's a constructed reality. It's a story told on purpose.
And maybe the most surprising part of this study is the role of the experts. You'd assume the people studying the Arctic are the ones shouting fire about all these threats, but the research suggests they might actually be the ones helping to hide the smoke.
It's a very counterintuitive finding. We're going to look at why having, you know, coffee with ministers doesn't equal influence and how this low-tension narrative benefits everyone involved until potentially it doesn't.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the political 4D chess, we need to understand the board. What is Greenland actually doing on the world stage? Because to me, it's just a big icy island owned by Denmark. But the source material says Greenland is wearing three hats. What are these hats?
So Grisis breaks this down really well. In the academic literature, Greenland isn't just one thing. First, it's what we call a paradiplomatic actor.
Okay, pause there. Paradiplomatic. That sounds like a medical condition. Let's translate that for everyone listening. What does that actually mean in practice?
It's a fancy way of describing a subnational government that acts like a sovereign country. Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, right? But its government, the Naalakkersuisut, it acts very independently. They sign agreements with the European Union. They sit on the Arctic Council. They're out there shaking hands and making deals to assert their own place in the world, distinct from Copenhagen.
So they're kind of like the teenager who wants to be treated like an adult at the dinner table. They're building their own foreign policy, even though technically they aren't a fully independent state yet.
Precisely. That's hat number one. Hat number two is the one the Pentagon cares about, a site of U.S.-China competition. This is the geopolitical chessboard. If you control Greenland, you control the access points between the Arctic and the North Atlantic. It's crucial for missile warning systems, for monitoring Russian naval activity.
Which explains the gold bars. It's the ultimate unsinkable aircraft carrier.
In many ways, yes.
Mm.
And finally, hat number three, the mining hub. As the ice melts, unfortunately, it reveals land. And that land is sitting on potentially massive deposits of uranium and critical minerals, rare earth elements that are essential for batteries, phones, the whole green energy transition.
And naturally, that attracts China.
It attracts everyone. So you have these three really dramatic roles. A diplomat fighting for recognition, a military fortress, and a treasure chest of minerals. You would think the government reports from Denmark and the U.S. would read like a Tom Clancy novel. You know, high stakes, high drama, imminent threats.
But they don't.
Not at all. And this is the core of the study. Grecius analyzed years of public documents, risk assessments, strategy papers, and found that despite these dramatic hats, the official narrative is incredibly boring.
Boring on purpose.
Absolutely. They actively work to keep the temperature down. They construct this narrative of low tension. It's not that they don't see the drama, it's that they refuse to talk about it in dramatic terms.
Let's unpack who benefits from this boring story. Let's start with Denmark. They're the parent state here. Usually in the defense world, if you shout threat, danger, you get more funding from NATO. You get more attention. Why would Denmark want to downplay the risks?
That is the logical assumption. But you have to look at the internal family dynamics of the Kingdom of Denmark. It's a complicated relationship. You have Denmark, the Faroe Islands, and Greenland. Now, legally, Denmark controls foreign policy and defense. Greenland controls almost everything else, domestic issues, resources.
So there's a clear division of labor.
On paper, yes. But here's where we get into what the expert calls the sovereignty game. If an issue is framed as a security threat, capital S, capital T, it automatically falls under the defense portfolio. That means Denmark is in charge. Copenhagen gets to sit at the head of the table and call the shots.
I see where this is going. If Denmark screams security threat too loudly, they're effectively seizing control back from Greenland.
Exactly. If they militarize the conversation, they risk alienating Greenland. The Greenlandic government might feel like Copenhagen is using security as an excuse to take over again, which would just fuel the independence movement.
So Denmark has to walk this tightrope. They need to show the U.S. and NATO they're in control, but they can't look like they're overstepping with Greenland.
Right. They want to be the adult in the room who can manage the North without needing outside help. So they use a very specific linguistic trick that the study found in the documents. They talk about risks, but they almost never use the word threat.
Wait, is there really a functional difference between those two words?
Yeah.
Or is that just semantics?
In international relations, the difference is massive. A threat implies an existential danger, something that requires a hard security response, soldiers, missiles, immediate action. A risk is just a challenge. It's something you manage diplomatically.
Can you give me an example of how they apply this to something real? Like, let's take China. Everyone's worried about China in the Arctic.
The China example is the strongest one in the study. The Danish intelligence reports from 2011 all the way to 2022 acknowledge that China is interested in Greenland. They talk about mining, they talk about investments, the Polar Silk Road.
Which usually freaks Western governments out.
It does. But the Danish documents consistently frame this as a commercial interest or a risk of political interference. They specifically avoid calling it a direct security threat, even when they mention the risk of debt trap diplomacy, where China lends money to gain control of infrastructure. They frame it as a solvable diplomatic issue, not a military one.
So by calling it a challenge rather than a threat, Denmark keeps the file on the diplomat's desk, not the general's desk.
And that maintains their legitimacy. It keeps the kingdom together. Low tension is essentially a survival strategy for Danish control over the Arctic. If they started treating Greenland like a war zone, the U.S. might just decide Denmark isn't capable of handling security and step in more aggressively.
That makes sense for Denmark.
Yeah.
But let's pivot to the United States. They're the superpower here. They're the ones who usually love a good, robust security strategy document. Why would they play along with this low-tension game?
This was one of the most stunning findings in Grecius's research. When she analyzed the major U.S. Arctic defense documents, specifically looking for mentions of Greenland, do you know what she found?
I'm guessing not much, based on where this is going.
Almost nothing. It is missing in action. In the 2019 Navy Arctic Roadmap, barely mentioned, the 2013 National Strategy, absent. The author calls this strategic inertia.
Hold on. The U.S. tried to buy the place. They have a massive base there. How can they just not mention it in their strategy?
Well, think about the history. The U.S. has been in Greenland for over 80 years since the 1941 defense agreement. They have the Patufik Space Base, which used to be called Thule. It's a massive installation, critical for space dominance and missile defense. It's just a fact of life.
So they don't need to talk about it because they already own the access.
Precisely. It's low tension by omission. By not writing about it in these high-level strategy docs, they effectively keep it off the radar. If the U.S. put out a document saying Greenland is our critical fortress against Russia, it would force a public debate. It would force Denmark to react. It would force Greenland to ask for more rent.
So silence is cheaper and easier.
Silence serves the status quo. It creates a situation where the U.S. presence is just strategic background noise. It's assumed, not debated. Why stir the pot by writing a strategy document that screams about vulnerabilities?
It's almost like the furniture in your living room. You don't have a family meeting about the sofa every week. But if someone tried to take the sofa, then you'd have a problem.
That's a perfect analogy. And up until recently, no one was trying to take the sofa. So the U.S. was happy to let Denmark handle the PR while they quietly maintained their radar systems.
Okay, so Denmark uses calm words to keep the family together. The U.S. uses silence to avoid paying more for the sofa. But what about Greenland? They're the ones actually living there. They want independence eventually. How do they play this game?
This is where we see a countermove called desecuritization.
Okay, another big word. We had paradiplomacy, now desecuritization. Break it down for us.
It's the exact opposite of securitization. Securitization is when you take a normal issue, say migration or drug use, and frame it as a national security threat to justify using the military or emergency powers. Desecuritization is intentionally taking a security issue and dragging it back into the realm of normal politics.
Why would Greenland want to do that? Usually, small nations want big nations to guarantee their security.
It goes back to the competencies we just discussed. Remember, Denmark controls security. Greenland controls social and economic affairs. So if Greenland can convince the world that a problem isn't a military threat, but an economic challenge,
then Greenland gets to be the one to solve it.
Bingo. It's a power play for agency. By reframing the narrative, they gain control. The source highlights Greenland's 2024 foreign security and defense policy. It has this incredible slogan, "Nothing about us without us."
That is very direct.
It is. And in that document, they explicitly state, Greenland and the Arctic is an area of low tension. They agree with the Danish narrative, but for a completely different strategic reason. By agreeing that it's peaceful, they argue that they should be allowed to build trade relationships with whoever they want, including China or the EU or the US without Danish interference.
So they use low tension to open the door for business.
Yeah.
If it's a war zone, you can't have Chinese investors. If it's a peaceful market, you can.
Right. They emphasize social security over national security. They talk about unemployment, cost of living, the effects of climate change on hunting. They take the focus off the missiles and put it on the people. It effectively tells Denmark, you don't need to step in here with your military hat on. We've got this handled as a domestic issue.
It's so clever. Everyone is agreeing on the surface. Everything is calm here, no problems. But underneath, they're all wrestling for control, using that same agreement.
It's a constructed reality. It's not necessarily that the tension is low, but that everyone has agreed to call it low because it benefits them all individually.
Now, this brings us to the twist regarding the experts. We mentioned earlier that you'd expect the academic community to be the ones puncturing this balloon. If anyone is going to call out the emperor's new clothes, it should be the scientists and researchers. But the study says they are butter spread too thin. What does that mean?
This part of the deep dive really resonated with me. The source describes the Danish Arctic expert community as incredibly tiny. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs Arctic office is only about 20 people.
20 people?
Yeah.
To manage the strategy for the entire kingdom in the Arctic? That seems impossibly small.
For the whole kingdom. And the academic community isn't much bigger. The experts and the politicians, they aren't strangers. They have coffee together. They meet in the hallways. They've known each other for years.
Normally, we think of access as a good thing. If I'm a researcher and I can text the minister, I should be able to influence policy, right?
You would think so. But the study found that in this specific case, access does not equal influence. In fact, it might be the opposite. Because the community is so small and tight-knit, there's a massive amount of pressure not to rock the boat.
Ah, the echo chamber effect.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be invited to the next coffee meeting, you don't tear apart the minister's strategy.
Exactly. The low-tension narrative is so structurally important to the state, for all the reasons we just discussed, that experts often end up just reinforcing it. They provide legitimacy.
Legitimacy how? Are they just signing their names to blank checks?
Well, the government will commission a report. The experts write it. But because everyone knows the goal is to maintain the status quo, the report usually concludes, yes, there are risks, but we should handle them diplomatically.
Hmm.
They aren't really challenging the policy. They're just adding academic footnotes to it.
The source mentioned something called the Zilmer Report from 2022. Is that an example of this?
Yeah. Yes. The Zilmer Report was a massive collaboration of experts. It was supposed to be a comprehensive review. But ultimately, it didn't change the trajectory. It largely reinforced the government's pre-existing view that diplomacy is the primary tool. The experts are used to back up the story everyone wants to hear.
And is it the same dynamic in Greenland?
Even more so, the community in Nuuk is even smaller. One interviewee in the study said, "You always meet someone you know. It makes critical debate really hard. If you criticize the government's strategy, you aren't just criticizing a distant institution. You're criticizing your neighbor, your cousin, or the guy you need to approve your grant next week."
That social pressure creates a conformist culture. So despite all this brain power looking at this, the low-tension narrative is almost immune to criticism. It's just too useful to fail.
That's the paradox. The narrative limits the influence of the experts. They are caught in the middle, reinforcing the blanket that covers the tension.
So let's zoom out and look at the whole picture. We have a region that is arguably one of the most important strategic locations on Earth. You have the three hats: the diplomat, the chessboard, the gold mine.
But those hats are hidden under this blanket of low tension.
Denmark uses the blanket to keep authority over the kingdom. The U.S. uses the blanket to keep their access cheap and quiet. And Greenland uses the blanket to build their own economy without Dad Denmark watching over their shoulder.
And the experts are sitting on top of the blanket, nodding along because lifting it up would cause too much trouble for their careers and their relationships.
It effectively kept the Arctic peaceful, or at least kept the illusion of peace intact. But here's the... So what? The source mentions the cracks are showing. We can't keep this up forever, can we?
No, we can't. The invasion of Ukraine in 2022 changed the tone significantly. We're starting to see Denmark shift. The language regarding Russia has hardened. The 2024 Greenlandic strategy acknowledges cyber threats in a way they haven't before.
The reality is forcing its way through the narrative. You can only call a wolf a large dog for so long before it bites you.
Precisely. Narratives shape reality, but they can't ignore it forever. If the geopolitical pressure from China or Russia becomes too blatant, this low-tension construct might just collapse.
And here's the final thought to leave you with, and it's a big one. This study, this analysis by Gabriella Grishas, it stops its data collection before November 2024.
A critical date.
The U.S. election. We are now looking at the return of an administration that didn't want to ignore Greenland. They didn't want low tension. They wanted to buy the place.
That changes the calculus completely. If the U.S. decides to stop being silent, if they decide to stop treating Greenland as background noise and start treating it as a literal asset to be acquired or heavily militarized, the whole house of cards falls down.
Can Denmark keep playing the calm card if the U.S. is shouting? Can Greenland keep desecuritizing if there are U.S. troops on every corner?
It's unlikely. We might be about to see exactly what happens when the volume gets turned all the way up.
The low-tension narrative survived the Cold War. It survived the first Trump term. But in this new era, it feels like we're walking on very thin ice. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next one.